This is Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. This is a show about peace, promoting it, preserving it, and monitoring those who would seek to destroy it.
Dum dum, deedle dum dum, deedle dum dum, deedle dum dum. There was a turtle by the name of Bert, and Bert the turtle was very alert. When danger threatened him, he never got hurt. He knew just what to do. He ducked.
Officials at the Department of Homeland Security issued strict warnings about terrorist attacks yesterday, and they recommended that all Americans take certain precautions, including stocking their homes with 3 days' worth of food and water in case of a strike with chemical, biological, or radiological weapons. They also advised that families should designate a room in their house to gather in case of attack, and that they should have blankets, flashlights, scissors, spare batteries, a manual can opener, and heavy plastic sheeting. And of course, extra rolls of duct tape. The likelihood of terrorist threats in the near future was a topic of discussion at today's hearing of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. Among those who expressed concerns was Committee Chairman Pat Robert, Republican from Kansas.
I got a call this morning from my wife. She said, "Dear, what did you do with the duct tape? Some nameless official indicated that people should start collecting bottled water, food, and duct tape one particular area of their home." She was quite concerned that as chairman of the Intelligence Committee, I didn't tell her to do this. And we've heard a lot of news about the increased dangers of the terrorist attacks. And I know this has really disturbed many Americans, and I suspect many members of the public are wondering what they can or should do in light of the increased danger.
In a chorus that was akin to a college science fiction writing class, the directors of the FBI, CIA, and Defense Intelligence Agency all addressed the Senate Committee on Intelligence. Robert Mueller, George Tenet, and Robert Wilson introduced new and unprecedented plans for domestic surveillance, intelligence gathering, and expansion of police forces and responsibilities. They called for increased vigilance and awareness from the U.S. population in the midst of what they described as a war without any foreseeable end. The evolution of domestic intelligence, as the directors termed it, arises in concert with new plans for additional legislation, which may be introduced to complement the Patriot Act.
Our intelligence agencies have too often failed to provide the timely, the cogent, and the comprehensive analysis that our national security requires. I intend to conduct vigorous oversight of the intelligence community to ensure that it provides our leaders with the quality of intelligence they need to ensure the security of the American people, whether at home or abroad. But the men and women who do this work must labor in secret. And it is only rarely, as in Secretary Powell's speech last week, that the world gets a chance to see the products of their labors with anything approaching the detailed appreciation that they deserve. Secretary Powell revealed just the tip of our intelligence iceberg.
Polling data shows increased hostility to the U.S. in many regions, especially in the Middle East. Europe seems to be splitting. NATO is in at least some form of public relations disaster, if not deeper than that. Moreover, many of our allies fear that an invasion of Iraq, especially one which proceeds without explicit U.N. authorization, if that's the way it turns out, will further radicalize and inflame the Muslim community, swelling the ranks and therefore the recruiting grounds for terrorist groups. In that context, some analysts suspect that Osama bin Laden is eagerly anticipating a U.S. invasion.
Raising the threat level is important to our being as disruptive as we possibly can be. The enhanced security that results from a higher level threat can buy us more time to operate against the individuals who are plotting to do us harm, and heightened vigilance generates additional information and leads. This latest reporting underscores the threat that the Al-Qaeda network continues to pose to the United States. The network is extensive and adaptable. It will take years of determined effort to unravel this and other terrorist networks and stamp them out. Al-Qaeda has also sharpened its focus on our allies in Europe and on operations against Israeli and Jewish targets. Al-Qaeda will try to adapt to changing circumstances as it regroups. It will secure base areas so that it can pause from flight and resume planning. We see disturbing signs that Al-Qaeda has established a presence in both Iran and Iraq. Bottom line here, Mr. Chairman, is that Al-Qaeda is living in the expectation of resuming the offensive.
The terrorist enemy, however, is far from defeated. Although our country's ultimate victory is not in doubt, we face a long war whose end is difficult to foresee. As these terrorist organizations evolve and change their tactics, we too must be prepared to evolve. FBI investigations have revealed Islamic militants in the United States. We strongly suspect that several hundred of these extremists are linked to Al-Qaeda. Our greatest threat is from Al-Qaeda cells in the United States that we have not yet been able to identify. Finding and rooting out Al-Qaeda members once they have entered the United States, including those cell members who avoid drawing attention to themselves and minimize contact with militant Islamic groups in the United States. Terrorists worldwide have ready access to information on chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear weapons via the Internet, while engendering widespread fear among Americans and amongst our allies. We are introducing, if we are to defeat terrorists and their supporters, a wide range of organizations must work together.
Defense intelligence is at war on a global scale, and all of our resources are completely engaged. Given the current state of the world and the likely future, I expect that these conditions will continue indefinitely. We recognize that we must know everything, something about everything, or are expected to know something about everything. We must be able to rapidly convert information into knowledge. To be successful, we must shift our collection paradigm from reconnaissance to surveillance, discard the notion that the collectors own the information they collect, and create a collection strategy that ensures all relevant capabilities, national, theater, tactical, and commercial, are developed and applied as a system of systems to ensure targeted, intrusive, and persistent access to an adversary's true secrets.
Many Americans, and I suspect many members of the public, are wondering what they can or should do in light of the increased danger. So what advice would you offer to the man or woman in the street other than to get out of the street?
We are in a period of heightened risk based on intelligence, and we will go through additional periods like this in the future. Our belief that Americans should go about their business, not cancel plans that they have because we have no specifics as to particular places or timing, but that we all should be more alert. Rarely does a day go by that we do not get a call from a concerned citizen who has seen something out of the ordinary that has called a police department or has called the FBI and said, this is a little bit out of the ordinary, perhaps you ought to look at this. And on several occasions, those alert citizens have brought to our attention individuals or patterns of activity that have led us to take action. And so while we're in this period of heightened risk, it is important for each of us to be more alert than we ordinarily would be, but not to change our patterns.
That was DIA Director Robert Wilson, before that CIA Director George Tenet, and FBI Director Robert Mueller. Thanks to Peace Watch Production Assistant Keith Chalgian for preparing that segment. While Americans are warned of possible terrorist threats quietly and outside of the scope of public scrutiny, the U.S. Justice Department is preparing to expand the powers of the so-called Patriot Act to further erode civil liberties guaranteed residents under the U.S. Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Pacifica Station WBAI's host Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen have been closely monitoring these developments and offer this perspective.
A striking editorial was published on February 7th in the New York Sun, in which it summoned New York City to obstruct the protest against a potential war in Iraq for as long as possible.
According to the Sun, Saddam Hussein is an enemy of America, and thus the anti-war protesters, in expressing their dissent with an assault against Iraq, are treasonous and consequently should be monitored by the New York City police for eventual trial.
This ties into the disclosure by the Center for Public Integrity of a secretly prepared sequel to the Patriot Act called Patriot Act 2, which even the staff of the Justice Department was not aware of, and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee and the Congress were kept in the dark as well. And the extraordinary thing about Patriot Act 2, as has been described by the Center for Public Integrity, is that it is an all-out assault upon our civil liberties and even our rights to citizenship.
Dr. David Cole of Georgetown University states explicitly what the intent is of Patriot Act 2. It would expand law enforcement and intelligence gathering. It would reduce judicial oversight over surveillance. It would authorize secret arrests. It would create a DNA database based on unchecked executive suspicion. It would create new death penalties. And above all, it would seek to take American citizenship away from persons who belong to political groups that the ruling class in this country doesn't consider favorable.
What we're dealing with here in our mobilizations against war is a defense of our civil liberties and of the rights of the people of this country, because this is a state terrorism against the peoples of the world, the peoples of Iraq, that will visit itself upon the American people as well. We are defending democracy and our rights when we oppose war in this country.
This is
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen.
Europe's split with America deepened after France, Germany, and Belgium vetoed measures to authorize NATO to make plans to protect Turkey in the event of an attack on Iraq. Peace Watch reporter Aaron Glantz was in Turkey recently, and we spoke with him about the latest developments as war with Iraq seems more and more likely. So, Aaron, what are your perceptions about the position of Turkey with regard to this war at this point? I know that you just left Turkey. You spent about 6 weeks there.
You know, it's very interesting, Verna. I mean, just like Jordan, almost everyone in Turkey is opposed to this war. And over 80 to 90% in public opinion polls. And the government of Turkey, which is very oppressive, like the government of Jordan, has actually been allowing anti-war demonstrations to take place, which is not the case here. Gatherings of more than 7 people are banned, as I said. There you've had thousands of people out on the streets protesting against the war. You've had public statements by people like the Prime Minister Abdullah Gül saying that Turkey will not allow U.S. Troops on its soil to fight this war unless the United Nations authorizes it. You have Turkey hosting a summit of Arab leaders against the war. But at the same time, we hear just today that Turkey has given the go-ahead for American troops to pass through its land on their way to a war in Iraq, which is very similar, in fact, to the rhetoric that you hear from Jordan. You hear that the no American invasion will be launched from Jordan, yet at the same time, there are American troops here and Patriot missiles and more American troops indeed coming every day.
Well, that's pretty duplicitous.
I think, when I was in Turkey, and I would ask people if you would want to say something to people listening to the radio in America, what would it be? You hear the same thing that you hear here in Jordan, which is, I would hope that the American people would stand up to President Bush, because they're the only people who have the power to not only force the hand of President Bush, but also to force the hand of our leaders, who are completely dependent on the United States in terms of the International Monetary Fund and security and issues like this. And they all remember what happened to Yemen during the 1991 Gulf War, when Yemen voted no at the UN Security Council and was severely punished by the first Bush administration.
Yes, well, I was about to say it's interesting that Turkey has taken a stance against the war and not allowing U.S. to launch any attacks from its soil. Then you added that they are allowing the U.S. troops to pass through, because Turkey is strategically and geographically located in such a way that if they were to block U.S. troops from coming across their soil, it would make it quite difficult, be more of a challenge for the U.S. to launch an attack.
Yeah, the position of Turkey is very key, and that's why I think that the U.S. peace activists, who are paying a great deal of attention to Iraq and to Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, might be well advised to also look at the northern border of Iraq and Turkey, where the government has been very reluctant to support the war. But like I said, you know, the 150 inspectors went and looked at the military bases there from the United States. Then you had General Richard Myers, the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, going over the head of the civilian government there and meeting directly with the military. And then now you have the go-ahead for U.S. troops to pass through pass through Turkey on their way to Iraq. And this sidesteps a very important issue, which is that under law in Turkey, the Turkish parliament must approve the use of its bases to house American troops. And with 70% of the parliament controlled by an Islamic party, the AK Party, that could be a very difficult vote for the United States. But if they meet directly with the military and only approve troops passage through Turkey as opposed to stationing there, perhaps they can sidestep this political issue.
Aaron Glantz, Peace Watch reporter in Amman, Jordan. Muslims around the world are celebrating Eid al-Adha, which marks the end of the annual pilgrimage to the holy city of Mecca. They observe this feast by slaughtering a lamb to remember Abraham's readiness to sacrifice his son Ishmael to show his allegiance to God. In Jordan, like in most Arab countries, Eid has a somewhat different tone this year. Ula Farawati and Raphael Kraft report from Amman, Jordan.
Hundreds of thousands gathered early this morning in the Jordanian capital's mosques to attend a special Eid prayer. Despite the chilly weather, Al-Fatih Mosque in primarily poor East Amman was packed.
Another rule that Prophet Muhammad used to abide by on the first day of Eid al-Adha is that he won't break his fast until he slaughters a sheep.
What are you doing here?
I'm here to buy a lamb for Eid.
On which criteria of quality will you take your lamb?
We don't want it to be too old, and we want it to be fat and big, so that we can have so much meat and give it to the needy.
Has Eid a signification for you today?
Of course. I mean, this Eid is more difficult than the ones before, because the situation in this region does not offer us any peace of mind or sense of safety, since Iraq is a close country and it is being threatened.
Like Samer Masri, most of the people at Amman's municipal slaughter yard are choosing their lambs with obligation rather than joy. Aisha, in her 60s, is a Palestinian refugee who fled British Mandate Palestine in 1948.
They are slaughtering human beings in Palestine, not sheep. They are in prison. They live under occupation. Look at my clothes. How poor I am. But slaughtering a sheep is halal. It's an obligation.
In front of hundreds of sheep, a man sharpens his knives. He has just slit the throats of two sheep. They lie in a pool of blood, beheaded, waiting to be chopped in pieces. Farouk Khouli, a customer, explains the meaning of the sacrifice.
We slaughtered this lamb in following the example of Abraham when God asked him to slaughter his son Ishmael. But God was so merciful that he sent him a big sheep to slaughter instead. This is mentioned in the Holy Quran, and this is the truth.
Ibrahim Badran, a sheep vendor, is dealing with three customers at a time. He sells his sheep for $80. He says people are spending less money than last year because of the possibility of a war in Iraq. The yard was packed last year, while this year, some Jordanians have started stocking up on food and kerosene in the event of a military conflict in the region. On the way to Mohatta bus station, where old Russian-made buses leave to Iraq, a kebab restaurant owner plays loud traditional Iraqi music mixed with Palestinian lyrics. Husay, an Iraqi Shiite bus driver, has been waiting for passengers for the past 4 days. Last year, the Jordanian government tightened visa requirements for Iraqi workers who want to come to the kingdom.
I am not near my family. When I'm back in Iraq, I will know what plans my family has to celebrate Eid. I can't go back unless my bus is full. I am very far away from my family. I am so sad.
For Pacifica's Peace Watch, I'm Ola Farawati with Raphael Kraft in Amman.
Stefan Smith, folk songs and poetry have become national anthems to the activist community. We caught up with this cultural activist Saturday as he joined some 100 people at D.C.'s Youth Activism Summit. He spoke with Reem Kathuta, Peace Watch producer from WPFW, Pacifica Station in Washington, as she illustrated a media class by interviewing him.
I'm down here in Washington, D.C. to sing at a couple of events to help build the youth movement, really, and student campus movement against the war and for peace across the United States.
The generations before were filled with fear and fell for war and fought each other to have more. It's not my cross to bear, 'cause we are here on earth today, and if there'll ever be a way that we will see a brighter day, we got to move along. Lift our hearts up to the sky, free from wondering how or why, and pick up our guitars and sing a song of healing, 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 a song of healing.
Why do you care to participate in youth events and to also activate against the war?
I want peace. Humanity's been waiting for peace and for equality since the beginning of time, and we've never quite achieved it.
Let's see if I can put this differently. The new world order's gonna get heard just by being me, 'cause I ain't seen nothing but hype, no controversy. So it looks like this time it might have to be me. So yeah, confidentially, it's my personal business how the rock star gets fame, exploiting poor folks to get rich, so tell me who's to blame. Shame on you, you poser, wake up, party's over. Kill the Land Rover, army buggies stole the world over. Yeah, the world that's soon to be over, the way this here deal is going down. That's why it's my personal business how the Bush and Cheney families been doing business with the Hussein Laden families, and getting fights when things don't go quite right, you see, and whip up wars when they need profits for the military. The chickens already came home to roost, the cat's out the bag with teeth sharpened on the truth. So even if the dirty businessmen get their war, the truth been told and will be known and grown forevermore. And if anybody doubts it, look how Nero's remembered. Every lie finally to time and God surrenders. Yeah, while the refugees sing, doom. Business, business everywhere runs the country through your hair. Lay my life on the line to dare all these posers everywhere. Business, business in your face, profit making every place. Even Red Bull music's laced. Time to give those fakes a taste. Who made business of the earth, determined its godly worth. Time to put it in a hearse before this whole wide world bursts.
The war that we're faced with right now is simply the result, really, of our failure to achieve equality and so forth, the dreams that we've all wanted forever. And the youth, as well as lots of people today, understand that really that's what this war is about. It's about greed and oil, inequality, and things that we as a human race just don't want anymore. We know there's a better way to live together, and we are here to achieve that.
When did you start being so politically aware?
Well, I was raised that way because of my background. My mother was a social worker, but I have a mixed ethnic background. I was born in America and raised in the South. My mother's Austrian and my father's Iraqi. Although I was raised Christian, my mother had some Jewish descent, and being Iraqi Muslim on my father's side, I've kind of got all the sides that are fighting with each other in my own blood. So just to be sane for myself, I have to transcend those differences. So I personally have to have peace. If I can be sane, the whole world could be at peace, you know?
It was interesting because just after you started talking about peace, you talked about equality. So are you saying that we have to have justice and equality? And what's the relationship in your mind between that and really accomplishing peace?
Well, of course we have to. I mean, that's what Christ and Plato and Gandhi, Martin Luther King, all have talked, all of our greatest prophets and philosophers and poets have talked about since the beginning of time. I mean, and that is the real dream that we've always set out to have. That was also a dream implicit in the American Constitution, but it seems to be one side of the dream that has been left to the wayside. As a result, I look forward now for this generation to be the first generation, and that's why it's great to see all these youth here, to be the first generation maybe in history that ever actually started a pan-global movement for civil rights, which is really what's growing out of the globalization. I call it good globalization, pro-ethical globalization, and the anti-war movement. That's what we're building here, that universal and international civil rights movement for real equality so we can have peace and real democracy, actually.
You said that you are Iraqi. Do a lot of people in the music industry know about that, and has it affected your being recorded?
You know, when I first came out, I got to New York City, and I was playing with a couple of large signed bands on Elektra and performing regularly with Allen Ginsberg, and a great poet who was a real mentor to me when I first moved to New York. And so, sure, I was getting courted by all kinds of people that wanted to make records with me, corporate accounts, and I was told by a few of them that I should conceal the fact that I was Arabic, particularly because my persona is that I'm a totally American guy who's Southerner and a champion fiddler. I grew up judging fiddle competitions. I mean, you don't get much more American than that. The idea that I actually was half Iraqi or Arabic to them was highly threatening. And I was actually told I should change my name. A few times I was told, yeah, you can't be that. People think you're a terrorist. And you know what? Those people are mistaken, and the world that they live in of fear, you know, made them say that is over. And I think all the youth right now that are standing up for real equality around the world know that, and that's what we're here for.
In your heart, when people start equating Arabic and terrorist, what does it do to you?
To me, it's painful, particularly in this country, only because the people's education level, the little that is told to us in the media as Americans about the history of the Middle East and the breakup of the Middle East and so forth, and the various great cultures and peoples there, it's so misinterpreted and misunderstood that basically nobody on earth is any different than anybody else. And you know, some internal, like, very universal way, we all want peace, I mean, for the most part. And to think that there's any race or any type of people that better or worse than anybody else is totally mistaken.
Are you in touch with your Iraqi side of the family?
Well, my father and I are in very close contact now, though he didn't raise me. But I have not, you know, my whole family on my father's side, he's the only one not in Iraq. So my entire family is in Baghdad and in Mosul, which are the two largest cities, which are both scheduled for carpet bombing. On a scale that never has been done before in the history of the human race. So that causes a lot of pain for me. And, I've been trying to reach, and I will try to reach this week, my uncle who lives in Baghdad, Ghazi, you know, and send him my love.
Pacifica's Peace Watch is produced in Washington, D.C. by Scott Gurian. Our editor is Lona Elias. Our engineer is Granger Helvey. We had production assistance from Adil Hamad of KPFA, Keith Shaljian, and Reem Kathuta. Thanks to Pete Karakis, RadioForAll.net, and Shane Rock at WebActive.com for web help. Special thanks also to our consulting producer, Sam Husseini. Copies of this program can be ordered from the Pacifica Radio Archives by visiting the website at PacificaArchives.org or by calling 1-800-735-0230. If you'd like to support this type of programming, we urge you to visit Pacifica.org and make a pledge through our secure online website, where you can send your donations to Pacifica Radio, 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20009. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the show. I'm Verna Avery Brown, the executive producer. Thank you for listening.
Big Vehatson, Tei Lach, Hayafa Banashim, Tei.